Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby! Touchdown!
Before we get to today's show on the Blue Wire Podcast Network, a quick reminder. The podcast is sponsored by TickPick, TickPick.com, the original no-fee site. What you see is the advertised cost is what you pay at the end. Fantastic site who will match up to 110% of any other website, app, whatever it is you use for tickets. They will match up to 110% if you find a cheaper seat out there. TickPick has great options and opportunities for you near the stadium, hotels, restaurants, ways to get there with Uber, all inside their app. Fantastic app that I have personally used, and they will give you $10 off your first purchase by going there and using the promo code breakdown or going to tickpick.com/breakdown. Take advantage of the awesome opportunity at TickPick, the original no-fee site. Now, let's get over to the OBR film breakdown. Oh, we're already here. I am the sole editor and your host, Jake Burns. We don't have any fancy designs to get to the next segment, so I'm diving right in. It was a busy day of Browns news, right? It is, a lot of stuff happening. Jadeveon Clowney, I'll just throw the nuggets at you as they came through. The biggest news, Anthony Walker's off to the IR. Something serious happened with that hamstring. It'll be a minimum of 3 games. The Browns will probably play Malcolm Smith, Elijah Lee. Mike is my best guess. Could Green Dot either of those guys? Could Green Dot John Johnson if he's going to be, you know, the consistent one on the field? We'll see sort of how all that shakes out. But, you're going to lose players throughout the year. It sounds like Walker's going to be able to come back at some point. I think he's a valuable part of this defense. It stinks. Not the end of the world. Have other linebackers step up and play a bit more. Play JOK a bit more. You're going to have to rely on who's in the building. I do like Elijah Lee. There were some Reuben Foster rumors. Doesn't seem like that's going to happen. And the Lee bump up to the active squad probably tells you that that's not going to happen. So, again, a long year. You're going to lose some people. Don't panic about it, okay? So they'll plug and play with who they have. Make the best of it. Grant Delpit will be back. They'll have some more DB flexibility between Delpit. Hopefully a full game of Ronnie Harrison. Hopefully. And they'll be okay. I'm not all too worried about it. It should be just different ways to make it work, and I think they have the bodies to do it. Other pieces of news that I think are of note today, nothing minor here, but could also be major, with the Ohio lawmakers pushing to get rid of the First Energy Stadium name due to bribes that were pushed to get House Bill 6, I believe, to go through. I'm not great with this stuff, don't quote me, but it is a long-going Ohio issue. And they want the First Energy name off of the stadium because it's a treasured thing to have your name of a company on the side of a stadium or the primary naming rights. And whatever transpired there, haven't read up enough about it, but I know that there was some bribe actions going on, and that is something that is being pushed for. So it is a possibility for things to happen in the future. Otherwise, Chris Kiffin noted that there was an up-and-down game from Jadeveon Clowney. They hope to get some more consistency from him. I thought Clowney was pretty good for the most part. They really are excited about some things they have in place for the Texans, so we'll keep a close eye on that. We also learned there's a big shroud of mystery around who will play left tackle in this game. They have already ruled out Chris Hubbard with the left tricep, so that is going to be a decision that is worth heavily monitoring in the next few days. It could be Jed Wills. Stefanski said that they have a plan in place. We'll see how it goes over the next few hours and how Jed responds. And then if he's able to make it to the game, we have a plan. If he doesn't, he says he takes it case by case. But as of right now, it's very much up in the air. So that leaves planning and getting ready James Hudson, which is in the realm of possibility. Obviously, the fourth round rookie who was not on the active roster, the 46-man game day roster, just last week. So they'll have a plan in place. Or Blake Hance could step in, maybe play a little out there. We'll see if Michael Dunn, who's also questionable, is going to be a factor out there as well. We'll see. We don't know. It's up in the air. But the way they prepared people on the fly last year, I have nothing but confidence they'll figure it out. The hope is that Jed can play, and that would solve, a lot of the issues at hand. As far as the Texans go, they have Farrell Brown questionable on the injury report. Linebacker Cam McGregor-Hill is also questionable with an illness. Not many other things to note. For the Browns side, Troy Hill is dealing with a hamstring foot. J.C. Treader with the knee. Anthony Schwartz with a hamstring, and then Michael Dunn with a back, like I just mentioned. So not any reason to believe some of those guys won't be out there, if not all of them. So we'll keep an eye on left tackle, see what they do there. We'll see what announcements are made, what decisions are made about what they're going to do at Mike Backer, who's going to be the green dot. That stuff will leak out over the coming days. It's tough to lose Hubbard, especially when you're dealing with Jed's injury. So left tackle has to get shored up, and I'm sure we'll get a clear plan and nothing but trust that they'll figure this out in a week that probably above all else, many other weeks, they can afford to suffer some sort of weird setback like this. But as our guest is going to mention here in just a minute, the Texans are a very dangerous team, right? I don't think that they're a team that you can just push around. They're old, mature. The 12.5 point line scares me. Again, it just scares me. I think the Browns are going to win. But again, you're going to get a hungry Texans team with a ton of former Cleveland Browns eager to come back, eager to play their old team. And it's definitely worth, making sure that you have that appropriate fear, right? That you're always appropriately afraid of letting your guard down. I think that's something that the Browns have to be prepared for. I'm sure they're talking about it. They know they're the better team. There's not a doubt about that, but you can never sleep on another NFL team, especially some of these guys who are going to come into Cleveland hungry, the Tyrod Taylor, Baker Mayfield rematch, right? And I know you can laugh it off and Tyrod whatever, but you know, there's just an added motivation to this game. Not only the 12.5 point line, but also these guys coming back. So we got a great interview today with James Carlson. You can find James Carlson on Twitter. You can look up his Texan stuff. He has a podcast called Texans Unfiltered. He's at youngre_gold on Twitter if you want to follow him there. But they're a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. They do a great job covering the Texans, and he has a great interview. We go through all of the preseason drama, all of the coaching drama, all the media doubt, little bit of Deshaun and mixed in there. But it's really good. He gives a ton of insight on the players that are going to play in this game, how they performed in week one. And just a really good segment here. So before we get over to that interview, though, I want to get a quick word with our sponsor.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, James, welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We got some football coming up tomorrow. We have, what I think should be a pretty good game. I think that sometimes people get a little too invested in what they think a roster looks like from afar. And I think that I don't think it's wrong to say James has been a whirlwind of an offseason, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably maybe an understatement, to be honest with you. it's been a crazy 8 months. It started in December and just kind of carried on. But, we're here. It's week two. There's lots of reasons to be excited as the football season is here. The Texans came off of a win. So I think we're just trying to carry that optimism to a week-by-week basis and just continue down that path.
Yeah, I'm curious. We're not even going to talk to Sean because I think it's been so flushed out at this point that it's not even worth our time, and he's not going to be a factor to this season at least. So I want to know sort of what your expectations were. Were there any expectations? Was there a, hey, we need to be bad to get somebody really good, that sort of vibe? And then two, after you sort of address where you were going into week one, after week one, has there been a sort of recalibration that maybe this team can compete a little bit more?
Yeah, I think, coming into the season for me, I tend to block out a lot of the noise and form my own opinions when it comes to, this team and just sports in general. I think it's the media always has an agenda that, to create a narrative around things and create an atmosphere that garners clicks and things of that nature. And as a Browns fan, you know firsthand just on how the media can, use the team to just trash for quite some time. My expectations for the season, they weren't high, but they weren't low either. I think I look at it as it is a rebuild. You had a top five quarterback just up and quit on your team after, 3 months after he signs a life-changing contract. I think that's a hard task for any team to maneuver around, right? And then when you add the fact of the allegations, you can't trade him now. And so there's just so many different things going on with the team that I think it's fair to have just an optimistic perspective when it comes to the way that the roster is being built. You know, a lot of 1 to 2 year deals, you know, seasoned vets, no stars, but guys who have played a lot of football in this league. So it doesn't look to me like this team is tanking. It looks like they did this because given the cap situation and the lack of draft picks coming in, Nick Caserio had coming into the season, he was kind of, you know, playing GM with one hand tied behind his back, and then the Deshaun situation happened. So now he's playing GM with two hands tied behind his back. And I think he built a pretty good roster. Like I said, no stars whatsoever were signed, but, you know, good football players. And so the expectation coming into the season was, I thought they'd be somewhat competitive. I thought that, you know, they'd field the team that was looking to compete each week, you know, on wins and loss totals and stuff like that. I didn't really get too much into maybe 6 wins, I think, is what I said at one point. But then, you know, looking at the division and week one, I think there's been some changes mentally for me. You know, we beat the Jags, who are a horrible team, right? You know, if anybody should have had a bad narrative coming into the season, it should have been the Jags. And they had the number one pick overall. But Urban Meyer has never been, you know, a guy who sticks around and sticks to a plan and a process. And there's no way that he does it here in Jacksonville. I don't even know if he was mentally prepared to handle an NFL team. They have, you know, a terrible roster. And I expected us to win that game. Now, what I didn't expect was for us to beat them down from kickoff to the end of the game. You know, for 4 quarters, we really just kept punching them in the mouth every chance we got. And for me, that was really the biggest takeaway from week one for the Texans was the fact that, yeah, we won, but it was the way we won. You know, we beat them down and never looked back. And so for me, I'm feeling pretty optimistic going into this week. I know this Browns team is extremely good, tons of talent all around. But that 12.5-point spread, I think it's just utterly disrespectful. I that's a huge spread. I don't even know if the Browns have ever had a 12.5-point spread as a favorite going into a game.
I know they haven't since 1999, and I do agree with you that that is a huge part of why I'm uncomfortable with this game, is because there is, I say it all the time, my listeners know, it's a motivation business. And when one team is extremely motivated, and again, as we saw last year, how Cleveland played in some of their games where everybody counted them out, it matters. It just does. And you're looking for any mental edge, and that's something that I think Houston can bring to Cleveland, and it worries me. So I will say this. I want to ask you kind of a bigger question, which is, you know, how, I guess, are you bothered? It's a weird question because we know how this went in Cleveland. Cleveland rock bottomed to collect high picks. They rock bottomed with the intention of, hey, we're going to go get people like Miles, like Baker, like Denzel. And it worked. It was a circuitous path, but it worked. So when they do bring in a bunch of these guys who are veteran players who can win games, as we've seen week one, they can go out and win some games. Are you bothered by that? Because maybe the plan should be here to bottom out heavy so that you can collect those high picks over the course of 2 years and then go out and, you know, get those difference-making types of talents? Or is it like, you know, should we go win 5, 6, 7 games and compete? I'm always interested in that from a perspective of someone covering the team, because there's no real perfect way to do this, but sitting in limbo, especially if Deshaun is going to be gone at some point, you got to figure out quarterback before anything else, as you know. So I'm just kind of get curious from a fan's perspective. Do you think they're doing, and you're not just, if you're someone who covers a team, like, or do you think they're doing this the right way? Or do you think, you know, maybe they should be trying to bottom out, not be signing these stopgap veterans who are just going to go out and win a couple football games here and there?
So this is going to be a pretty long answer, so bear with me. You know, I think the Texans are in somewhat of a unique situation that most teams, actually, I can't think of one team has ever really been in, right? A rebuild is one thing. But a rebuild when you have an asset like Deshaun Watson is completely different, right? So it can go one of two ways. One, somehow Nick Caserio convinces him to stay and he ends up being our quarterback. Or two, you get a Herschel Walker type trade for trading that quarterback. And all of a sudden your rebuild is just, it's a much quicker process, right? I mean, the asking price from what I'm hearing is 3 first-round picks and 2 starters. If that happens, and then you take into account what all the other draft capital we're going to have, you know, you really don't need to tank this year, right? And, you know, I think tanking, look, I applaud the way that the Cleveland Browns approached it. You know, they had Sashi Brown in. It was a very analytical approach. As it was basically as many at-bat attempts as we can get is what we want. And at that time, I think it worked for where you guys were at with your roster and kind of the, you know, the changing of the guard with all the head coaches and quarterbacks and things of that nature. It was nice because it was a change from what you guys have tried to do in the past. When it comes to this Texans team, one, there's no, I will never support a tank. I think, you know, for fans that pay for season tickets and jerseys and go and support the games and watch, you know, go to the bars, just whatever it may be, that's a hard pill to swallow for the fans. It's also a hard pill to swallow for beat writers, and it's also a hard pill to swallow for the players, right? You got to look at these stopgap veterans that were signed. They're guys that are looking to get another contract and another chance. You can't sell that locker room on tanking. If these are a bunch of young guys and it was about developing young talent and things of that nature, then that's a different story. But that's not who the roster is. I think we have the second oldest roster in the league. So they're trying to win. Or at worst, they're trying to be competitive. And I think given the fact that you have Deshaun Watson, let's say, you know, there's a settlement or, you know, whatever ends up happening with his civil cases, that's a whole nother conversation. But either way, that guy's going to play in the NFL, right? He's a top five quarterback at the most prestigious position in all of sports. There's no way this guy gets blackballed. So once whatever happens with the allegation goes away, you have an asset where you're going to be able to get a very, very high return. And then that rebuild turns into a 1 to 2 year rebuild if you hit on your picks. On top of that, then you're talking about the cap space that freed up from, you know, a $40 million contract and everything else. There's a plethora of things that are going to happen over the next year and a half. And, you know, I don't want to see them tank. I want to see them be competitive. I like the stopgap vets, because if you find a couple like Desmond King, Malik Collins, you know, Kruger Hill, Joe Thomas, whoever it may be, you have guys that potentially end up being somewhat of a diamond in the rough that develop well under your scheme, under Lovie Smith on the defensive side of the ball. And then you extend them, right? So that way you have some pieces to kind of play with when it comes to the draft and free agency. So I don't think they're tanking. I don't think they will tank. I think they'll try to be as competitive as they can be. I really like this coaching staff, to be honest with you. I know a lot of people aren't very high on Lacoly Hire. You know, he's 67. Why did he get his chance? Things like that. But I really like what they're doing. And the culture that they're establishing and building, I'm a big fan of. I think they're doing it right. You know, they brought in guys like Mark Ingram, who are voices in the locker room that understand what it takes to win. And it's working. It's working. And it's a big shift compared to what B.O.B. was, Bill O'Brien. I mean, that guy was he was surrounded by yes men. Nobody challenged his chain of thought. And he was just everybody do what he says. Everybody walked around on eggshells in the locker room. Now that's flipped completely. So I think what they're doing is going to work. It's just going to take some time to be able to see what ends up happening.
It's a fascinating study. I want to comment first on the thing you referenced with tanking, and it was a terrible process, right? It was really hard on fans, really hard on you, like you said, people covering the team to get out of the funk that was covering so many losing, not just seasons, but just that whole 1-31 stretch. It was brutal, and I wouldn't wish it on any team. I really wouldn't wish it on any team or anybody who cares about that team or works for that team or covers that team. It is a challenging time and something that people who general discussions around the Browns are trying to heal from, because it leaves a mark in your brain about the team, organization, all of it. So it worked for the Browns. They have things in the right direction, but it's not a perfect system because you still have to hit on picks. That's the huge thing. You know, it's not just collecting picks, it's actually hitting them. And that's the difficult thing. But with the Texans, it's an interesting study to me, James, because it's a bunch of guys that can help teams, right? So you say you got a bunch of guys who are good enough to help teams and you put them all on the same team. You have a bunch of older, mature, veteran players who all come together behind the idea, we weren't really wanted by other teams. We were cast off. We were let go because of injury. Like, that's the collective underdog mentality, and something I think really makes them dangerous. And it's like, to me, it's everything that the mainstream, and I don't like using this stuff all the time, but the mainstream football media is against, right? Older coach, like you said, guys who have struggled maybe in other places, players who have been, like we said, cast off from their original team or some bigger role somewhere else they've been let go of. And it's just easy to poke fun at that and say there's no hope. But again, when you get guys that believe in what is being formed, the culture, it's a bunch of grown-up men, family-based men. I think it's a really interesting test for a sort of theory that can work in the NFL. Is that kind of how you're viewing it a little too?
Yeah, I mean, exactly, right? Like, you have guys who, like you said, were somewhat cast-offs, whether it be injury or, you know, scheme fits, right? That seems to be something that I swear is never talked about when it comes to players, right? Like let's take, for example, wide receiver Chris Conley, who was drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs and played with or behind Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, right? How was he ever going to have the opportunity to truly shine? And then he goes to Jacksonville, where they don't have a quarterback, and they probably are the worst ran organization, in my opinion, in the NFL. And yeah, they had their AFC, you know, tour championship, whatever it was that one year where they had an amazing defense. But outside of that, that team has really just always been a gutter team. And so he couldn't thrive there. And then he comes into camp and he's just lighting it up. And he becomes Tyrod's kind of security blanket at times. And then you have him opposite of Brandon Cook. So, yeah, I agree. I think, you know, this stopgap vet process that's happening, it's two things. One, you're getting guys that are buying into the program and are here to win and kind of rebuild their image and have a chance at, you know, a potential, you know, bigger contract next year. But then what you also have, and this is true, this is what I believe, is you have a GM who is willing to move on quickly from players, which we've already seen early on before the season, right? Bradley Roby gone. There were trades throughout the offseason that just continued. I think he made a total of 67 transactions from the time the offseason started to week one. And you have guys who are going to be able to help teams that need it before the trade deadline, right? We're already seeing injuries happen. So you got guys like Malik Collins, who is a 9-sack guy previously. I think it was 2019 with the Raiders. So you just have talent on the roster that could easily be used to grab more draft capital entering 2022. And they're going to play. And like from what I saw in week one, I'll tell you this, the players are bought in. And it's not one of those bought in type of things where you hear coach speak or you hear, you know, just the generic answers to things. You're hearing players go in depth and talk about other players in depth and the culture that's being built and the winning atmosphere and what needs to happen. Those aren't things you hear in a rebuild year. And so it's very interesting. Do I think that they're going to be like a Super Bowl contender? No, not at all, right? You can't do that without a top five quarterback typically. So, but they do have a competitive roster, and ultimately that's what I like the most about this roster.
Yeah, it's a bunch of guys that are good football players, maybe not great football players, but good enough, have been in the NFL. They know what it takes to succeed. You're right. Some of them flopped out due to scheme. Tyrod's an example of being in the wrong place at the wrong time 7 or 8 times. There's just a bunch of guys that bond in that way. And it's not like they're bad. It's just that they're, you know, this isn't replacement level guys. These are like guys that can play, that have performed well at other places. But again, you get pushed out for whatever reason. There's a myriad of different reasons. And to me, that's what makes them really dangerous. Now, we also get the tie-in this week of, like, I don't know, I'm looking at the roster here, like 14, 15 former Browns, which is another added level of motivation. Can't tell me Christian Kirksey doesn't want to come in and win in Cleveland. Can't tell me Tyrod Taylor doesn't want to come in and beat Baker Mayfield. It's going to be a personal atmosphere for them. There's going to be a lot of guys, and there's going to be a locker room rallying around the fact that, hey, man, a lot of our dudes played in Cleveland and were let go. And I don't know how many were let go and have bad feelings about Cleveland. I don't think all of them will, but there is going to be that element. So, you know, I think it's a real thing. So let's go through kind of position by, well, we'll start with this. 37-21 last week over the Jags. So in case you didn't know that, that was the final score. Pretty dominating. Shut Jacksonville down on third downs. 3 of 11 for Jacksonville. 12 of 21 for Houston. Outproduced them yardage-wise. Outproduced them on a yards per play. 6.0 to 5.8. threw for 289, ran for 160, held Jacksonville under 100 yards rushing, three turnovers for the Jags, so forced them into three, didn't have any turnovers for Houston. So that gives you an idea of week one. So talk a little bit about what they did, and then we'll kind of, you know, it looks like it's heavy Brandon Cook's targets. Farrell Brown, again, former Cleveland Brown, had a nice game. So we'll kind of go position by position. Who do you expect to be the contributors at wide receiver?
Yeah, so, you know, they ran a lot of pistol, which was, you know, is great for Tyrod's skill set, right? And you got to think David Coley comes from Baltimore. Pistol is really what was built on with Lamar Jackson. Now, he is not Lamar Jackson, but he does have legs. And he's pretty accurate with the football. He's been accurate his entire career. So it was a very interesting way to see the offense. You know, we saw a lot of downfield passes, which isn't something we see a lot from Tyrod Taylor. You know, coming in, he was known as check down Tyrod. But we saw balls being pushed downfield. So it's going to be really interesting. Farrell Brown is a guy that, you know, I know Browns fans know who he is, but this guy is developing into a tight end. And maybe a top tier tight end. I mean, this guy is very physical. He's motivated in every single way. He's coachable, and he's totally bought into the scheme and the way that he's being used. I expect to see a heavy two tight end sets this week against the Browns, especially with Anthony Walker out. We're very familiar with Anthony Walker, with him coming from the Colts. Pretty good coverage linebacker, very good linebacker in general. So I would assume that'd be a matchup that we'll probably try to expose pretty early with Jordan Akins and Farrell Brown. And then, you know, with the one wide receiver that isn't getting a lot of talk out of week one, and it's fair, is Nico Collins, our rookie out of Michigan, 6'6". The dude is just huge, and extremely talented. He sat out, the last year at Michigan because of COVID. So he opted out, ended up falling all the way to the third round. He's a guy that, you know, from everything I read from draft experts, had he had played, he likely would have been a first round to early second round wide receiver. But he was kind of forgotten about. And he's got a ton of talent. So it's going to be interesting to see. I would assume Denzel Ward will likely be lined up on Brandon Cooks, which is going to be an interesting matchup to see. Brandon Cooks is an extremely good route runner. You know, a lot of people talk a ton about his speed, but his route running capabilities is really what causes him to get open so often. And then he does have that breakaway speed. I think that the tight ends and the wide receivers have a real opportunity here to continue the chemistry that was built in week one and all through the offseason. And it's going to be a very, very fun matchup to watch, because we don't know a lot about this Browns defense, right? And that happens to any team that plays the Kansas City Chiefs in the first week. You really just don't know. You don't know if it's a great defense, a good defense, a better defense than last year, because you're going against the Chiefs. They're going to put up points. It doesn't matter what defense you are. So I think the Browns fans are going to learn a lot about the Browns defense. And I think Texans fans are going to learn a lot about their offense, because this is a better defense than what the Jags had. So it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah. The news of recent here is Anthony Walker to the IR, hamstring. So, we're going to have to see what the Browns do defensively with their Mike backer position. I don't know if they're going to play Malcolm Smith or if they're going to green dot John Johnson at safety and let him do it and shuffle in Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, but this game will present a unique challenge. I think Nico Collins, you mentioned his Michigan sufferings, and he slipped to the third round, pretty similar to what we see here with Donovan Peoples-Jones, who those two played together at Michigan and suffered the quarterback disaster together. So we were high on Nico Collins in draft time. We like him a lot. Yeah, it's an interesting group, skill guys. I mean, guys that have played well, guys that can perform if given opportunities. Philip Lindsay, Rex Burkhead, I think David Johnson, Mark Ingram, all of those guys will get touches. They'll be an active part of things. Tyrod, if Tyrod's cutting it loose, which I encourage him to be doing so. It's the first time in Tyrod's career he hasn't had someone looking over his shoulder, you know? So I think that there should be a level of fearlessness there with him. I want to talk about the O-line. Laremy Tunzel's the name that we all know. Max Sharping, Justin Britt, former Brown, Justin McCray, and Titus Howard. How's that group performing through the preseason into week one?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what this week's lineup looks like. So the left side, you got obviously Laremy Tunzel, top five, you know, left tackle. And then at left guard, you have Titus Howard, who originally was playing tackle for us for the last 2 years. He has played some time at guard, but it was right guard. That left side of the line got a ton of push last week against Josh Allen. So it'll be very interesting to see how they handle it. Laremy was coming off of COVID too. He actually had COVID and I think started practicing Wednesday before the game, coming back from COVID. So he wasn't even 100%. So it's going to be interesting to see. Justin Britt is an upgrade, hands down, at center over Nick Martin. Very physical guy, good in the run game. Not great in pass protection, but very solid in the run game, getting better at pass protection. And then at right guard, we have Max Sharping, who was a guy his rookie year 2 years ago everybody's extremely high on. He was actually the rookie that everybody talked most about. Played extremely well at left guard, and then now he's playing right guard. So there's a little change. He hasn't been great, but he hasn't been terrible. And then you have Marcus Cannon at right tackle, who also just last week came off of injured. Well, I wouldn't say injured. I always forget the designation, the physically unable to perform list during the entire offseason. So I think he only got in like a week of practice starting the last Monday. And he started at right tackle and played extremely well, too. So he's getting up to speed. The offensive line in general just played extremely well compared to what we've seen in years past. You know, it's going to be very interesting to see. We're very familiar with Clowney. Clowney's my favorite Texan of all time. I think he's one of those freak athletes that just has a bad rap, isn't given the props that he deserves. He's so
healthy.
Talented.
He's healthy and moving well right now.
When I watched him last week, I'll tell you this, that tackle for loss that he had, that looked like prime Clowney to me.
Yeah.
What you're getting from Clowney is a guy who could set the edge and shut down the run on his side of the field. He may not be the most dynamic pass rusher, but I guarantee you, if you run the ball towards Clowney, it's going to be very hard for you to get past him. He's just so quick. He has a quick get off, and then he got Myles Garrett on the other side. So it's going to be a test for the offensive line for sure. I can't wait to see what happens, because this is going to be a very physical game in the trenches, and it's going to be very fun to watch.
It should be. Browns have some emerging defensive tackle talent. Malik Jackson's a veteran, but young Jordan Elliott, a kid from Missouri, is coming along too. So it should be a nice battle along the interior to go along with those edge guys. Tack McKinley played pretty well week one too, as a rotational edge guy for this version of the Browns. I mean, I know he fell out unceremoniously with the Falcons, but it looks like he's got some juice and he's back, and he looked really good week one. So that should present another unique challenge. So offensively, we'll see. I think you can take advantage of the Browns linebackers, as we saw the Chiefs do. Greg Newsome, the rookie, wasn't really tested week one. We'll see if the Texans offense wants to challenge him. It should be interesting to see sort of how they scheme around some different things I think they can take advantage of. Grant Delpit, another player the Browns lost now for a while, all of his rookie year, second round pick going into 20, lost him, but he seems to be trending toward playing. We'll see if that happens. So they should add some secondary depth, and maybe Ronnie Harrison doesn't get kicked out after the first series. That would be nice. Talk defense. Let's talk about the box. So again, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm looking at Our Lads, which I think does a decent job with it, but clearly they didn't upgrade some of the offensive line data. So Whitney Mercilus, DeMarcus Walker, you mentioned Malik Collins, Jordan Jenkins on the 4-3 base, Kevin Pierre-Lewis, Zach Cunningham, and then our old boy Christian Kirksey. I think Camu Gregor-Hill plays a little bit there at the linebacker spot too. So yeah, fill me in if that's right, and then how they looked for you in week one.
Yeah, so another guy to add to that defensive line rotation is there's two guys, really, Charles Amenihu. Actually, three guys, I'm sorry. Ross Blacklock, Charles Amenihu, and Jacob Martin. Those are three guys who stood out week one on the film. Jacob Martin, I think, had the third quickest get off in the NFL in week one. He is a guy that Texans fans are extremely excited about, and beat writers are really enjoying the film that he puts on. Very aggressive and quick pass rusher. Charles Amenihu, third year guy. He's definitely poised to have a breakout year in year compared to what we've seen in the past from him. And then our second round rookie from last year, Ross Blacklock, defensive tackle out of TCU. He's playing more of the three tech this year compared to playing defensive tackle last year for us. It's going to be very interesting to see. He definitely had some pressures last week. So did Jacob Martin, Charles Amenihu, and Malik Collins. Whitney Mercilus had a sack. So we don't really know a lot about this defensive line yet. We just know that there are players and there's a lot of rotational pieces and lots of different looks that we can give you. As far as the linebackers go, I mean, Zach Cunningham is you know, I don't really know what to say about Zach. He's a great tackler. He has the side-to-side speed to be able to cover, but in schemes, he just gets lost and doesn't seem to understand his responsibility in his own scheme. Definitely an opportunity for you guys to take advantage of. If he's trying to lock down Njoku, it's going to be very interesting. I'm hoping that Lonnie Johnson's active this week and he's the guy that tries to cover Njoku, because he's done extremely well against tight ends in the past, shut down Travis Kelce for an entire second half of a regular season matchup in 2019. And then Kruger Hill, obviously, you know, a very good coverage linebacker, which is something that Texans fans and Texans beat writers can't really say that we've had for the last 4 years. We haven't really had a good coverage linebacker. And then Christian Kirksey, I think, was like a top five coverage linebacker in week one in the NFL. So definitely a mixed bag and lots of different players on the defensive side of the ball when it comes to the linebackers and the defensive line, but more upside than downside. And it's going to be interesting to see, because this matchup specifically, when you got, you know, Njoku and Landry, you know, Landry loves to go across the middle of the field. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, there's just a bunch of solid NFL talent there, which is the theme, right? The theme that gets overlooked. It's having mature guys who have seen a lot of different football unfold in front of them and applying their skill set collectively. Kirksey's a great example. If he's healthy, and you can make that caveat about, you know, probably several guys in the Texans roster, if they're healthy, he's a good football player, man. He was one of the better Browns linebackers over the past 10 years or so when he was right. It's just that they couldn't keep him right physically. I hope he finds health this year for sure, because I think he's a very enjoyable person, and when the body's functioning the way it needs to function, he can play. So looking at the secondary, again, a couple different, well, I see three names that are Cleveland-based names. I'm not sure Tavier Thomas is playing all too much. I think he's probably a special teams guy, but Terrence Mitchell's listed as a starter. Eric Murray's listed as a starter. I don't know if those guys are getting the time that this is listing, but obviously we know Justin Reed's a tough football player, good safety, and then Desmond King has been around the NFL for a good while, and he can obviously play in a bunch of different schemes. So, yeah, talk secondary real quick before we close and tell me how you think they're playing and what to expect.
Yeah, the secondary is probably the biggest question when it comes to this defense. And it's not that nobody is very good. Actually, it's exactly that. Nobody is very good, but at times all of them are somewhat good, right? And it just fits the theme that we've been talking about this entire time, right? Terrence Mitchell is not a guy that should be a number one corner, maybe not even a number two corner at this point in his career. You got Vernon Hargraves, who I think is still like 27, 26, young guy, had a pick last year. He's been like the dumpster can that has just been banged and banged for the past two seasons. He's been awful in coverage for us. And then now with this new coaching staff and secondary coach, he looks like he's actually developing and playing better than what we've seen. And then Desmond King in the slot, you know, sure tackler. You know, he's going to get burned at times with the shifty, quick slot wide receivers, but he's always going to get them down after the catch, which is great. It's not a secondary you're going to write home about. You're not going to have a lot of good things to say about it, but it's all about the two things that really matter when it comes to a secondary, and it's going to be the pass rush complementing the secondary and the secondary complementing the pass rush. If those two can work together in a cohesive manner, there's a real opportunity for them to be better than what we saw in week one. Also got to keep in mind though, in week one, there's not a ton of wide receiver talent on the Jaguars. Coming to you guys now, you know, there's a ton of wide receiver talent, even with OBJ out, right? You got Schwartz, you got Landry, you have Donovan Peoples-Jones. I mean, you have talented wide receivers. It's going to be very interesting to see how they match up. Will they go to a man scheme? Will they stick with zone? That's probably my biggest fear is, you know, are those three wide receivers going to eat against our corners? Because I think there's a real opportunity that they do. But you have to wonder, is it going to be maybe the safeties are going to play a role? Justin Reed had an amazing game last week. He's really coming into form. This defense doesn't make him think as much as he used to in Romeo Crennel's defense. So it's going to be fun to see. Eric Murray, I don't know. We haven't seen enough of him at safety. He played slot for us last year, so in his first season. So the first time we really got to see him at safety was last week in week one against the Jags. He did okay. He wasn't really like a shining spot in any form of the all 22, but definitely a guy that, you know, we signed for a pretty decent deal. I think that was like the deal that everybody laughed at last year, as far as the media goes and things of that nature. So the secondary isn't something to be excited about, but I don't know if it's a secondary that you need to worry about either. We really haven't been tested enough to really understand what our weaknesses are in the secondary. So we're hoping this week we'll learn a lot more about the secondary. And this is going to be something to watch, because you guys just have so much talent.
Yeah, and Baker's not afraid to rip it. He'll definitely challenge them. They're guys Baker's familiar with, too. I mean, he practiced with some of these guys. I mean, Eric Murray when he was in his younger years. Terrence Mitchell, he knows Kirko well. Like, this is going to be familiar territory, but they're also familiar with him, and they know how to pick at him, too. So that back-and-forth chess match will be really fun to watch. I want to ask one quick question before we go. Is there a kicker struggle going on there? They don't even have one listed, so I was curious who's kicking for the Texans right
yes.
now.
Yes. So Justin Sly kicked for us last week. He was on our practice squad during the offseason. Kymie Fairbairn seems to be battling some sort of injury. I think it's his ankle or hamstring, something like that. So he didn't play. So it looks like Justin Sly will be our kicker again this week. He was accurate as can be. He didn't miss one kick last week. Looked really good. He's a former linebacker. He's a great tackler on special teams. It'll likely be Justin Sly. I don't think Kyamie will be suiting up this week.
All right, James, this was great, great, great information. I know all the listeners of this podcast appreciate it. They feel much more prepared for what the Texans bring, who their roster is, and where the current state of the franchise is. And that is always the goal when we have a behind enemy line segment. So we really appreciate your time, man.
Absolutely, Jake. I really appreciate you having me on, and can't wait to see what happens on Sunday.
Big thanks again to James Carlson for joining us and giving all of that great insight on the Texans. It should be a really, really interesting game to see where both teams are, whether that first game win for the Texans was phony, whether the Browns can rebound. A lot to tell by this Week 2 matchup. Some reunions are going to happen, going to be fun. Subtle reminders about things that are out there of late. I wrote an Anthony Schwartz film room if you'd like to look at that. Also put up a film room that I did with Kyle Murphy we're going to be doing every week. It went on YouTube this week because my schedule for this past week was so chaotic, we couldn't do the normal Twitch show. That will be back Tuesday. On the show Tuesday, we will have defensive segment, offensive segment, and Baker film breakdowns going forward. Sorry about the chaotic nature of those this week. We'll also have more written content from myself coming up as well when my schedule gets back to normal. So keep your eyes out for that. A reminder again about Twitch. We had our show, our roundtable. You can go back and rewatch from today, tonight, Friday night. And then you can watch the Prospect Show with Stephen Thomas coming up Saturday at 11 a.m. before college football kickoff. So all of those great opportunities. It's September on Twitch, so you can get 20% off your subscription. Take advantage of that. I will have more coming up on the Texans with a game day preview Sunday morning, about 10 minutes like usual, talking about the things I'm paying attention to. Keep your eyes peeled for that. We'll also have a write-up on the game as well. Thanks for joining us today. Thank you for spreading the word about this podcast, as you always do. You guys are the best. Have a great Saturday, and go Browns!
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.